up some chicken breast and crack open a Muscle Milk, because today we're going to talk about getting jacked. Well, for a few people at least. Welcome to Real Talk Arkansas, the podcast where we dive into the stories behind the screen with filmmakers shaping Southern cinema. Today we're joined by writer-director Jared Cliff LaRue and composer Matthew Mazzani, part of the creative team behind West of Greatness, the story of the West We Go Muscle Boys. Jared and Matthew are both natives of Rogers up in Northwest Arkansas. Yeah, they grew up together, and then they went their separate ways, and they found their way back as creatives to work together on this project. So Jared now works as a filmmaker in New Orleans, and Matthew is a composer based out of Rogers. They're both incredibly talented people who, along with the rest of their team, have created an incredible film, West of Greatness. It blurs the lines between fact and fiction. They filmed it over 18 months in West We Go, Louisiana, which is right across the Mississippi from New Orleans. And they used a mix of actual bodybuilders and actors. And the actors themselves spent a lot of time, as I said, getting jacked, part of what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to hear about how they had that transformation and, you know, how Jared and the team got them on board and really, you know, followed them on this journey, which is a fictional journey. It's a very cool concept. It's not quite mockumentary because it's not humorous. And it's not quite Blair Witch Project and scary. It's imagine Pumping Iron, the famous documentary about Arnold Schwarzenegger and his crew out in Venice Beach and their weightlifting adventures meets 8 Mile, which is, you know, basically a fictional origin story for Eminem. It's kind of like that. And it's a very cool concept and a very great film. So stay tuned as we talk with Jared and Matthew about how they captured that authenticity and, you know, how Matthew made that music that really resonates and really about, you know, why powerful stories come from the places that we're trying to leave behind. West of Greatness had its premiere at the Bentonville Film Festival, but this was recorded a little bit beforehand, so we didn't get to talk to them about that. But it got a great response, and the whole team that was there really enjoyed it. And I think it's going to do really good things. So let's welcome Jared and Matthew to the show. Jared, Matthew, thanks for being here on Real Talk Arkansas.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, West of Greatness, film you guys had, big premiere, kind of a hometown premiere for you guys. You are both from Rogers, and it's going to be at Bentonville Film Festival in June. So that's got to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm beyond thrilled that the movie I get to premiere, my first feature, is going to be basically in my hometown, right? I grew up in Rogers, Sun County.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
This is the chance when you get to show your parents, be like, see, I did it. I mean, you doubted me.
Yeah, there is. Luckily, my parents were so supportive of the
That's
film,
good.
But like, there definitely is that feeling of like, in fact, we were on the news recently and one of my former teachers shared the news story. And she was like, Jared always said he was going to make movies and here he is making it. And it was like, yeah, that feels good, actually.
Yeah. And you were on there with Mackenzie and Jason the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt amazingly knows Jason and was able to book us on Good Day NWA.
Yeah, well, cool. Yeah, I go on there a lot to promote our events whenever we're doing things in NWA. So, well, Jared, I'll start with you then and just kind of tell me, how did you guys, you knew each other growing up, and Matthew too, you can kind of chime in on this, but how did you guys ever work together? Were you friends growing up? Kind of tell us about y'all's backgrounds.
Yeah, so I'll jump in. I grew up in Rogers, Arkansas, in the Rogers public school system, and so did Matt. We met each other at Kirksey when we were in sixth grade, and we became closer friends around seventh grade. I always thought Matt was really, really cool. He had this weird floppy kind of mohawk hair. Back in the day of skateboarding was huge, and he had these long socks that were these cool Van socks. I remember thinking like, oh, he's too cool for me to go talk to. And then we became friends in seventh grade, and then we went to Elmwood, and then we went to Rogers Heritage High School together. And so common thing back then for if you weren't into the jock scene was the skateboard punk music kind of scene of Rogers, Arkansas, which wasn't really a scene. We were kind of, I won't speak for him, but kind of the weirder kids. We were popular, but we were on the more alternative side. And so Matt and I just, we would play guitar together and try to write songs together. And
oh yeah.
It's funny to look back on those lyrics and cringe at what I thought was brilliant writing when I was 15.
Well, it's funny Jared mentions that because I remember us, we would get together and we would write songs and stuff. And I would always kind of, I would come up with a cool riff or whatever. And I was playing guitar and cello and all that stuff. And Jared, I would try and write songs and I would always struggle with lyrics. I could never come up with a good concept or lyrics. And I had this cool riff I was working on and Jared came over and I showed him, I had written some very bad lyrics and Jared just immediately, he wrote some line that just the flow of it, the prose, the analogy was so perfect that you could just tell back then it was Jared had whatever that thing is already, his ability for writing and stuff. So it was just kind of funny looking back on that. I was thinking about it recently because I was kind of writing the music and he came in and kind of had this story and that he came up with. And it was just kind of cool looking back then. It was already kind of, there's something forming back then too. So kind of funny.
Yeah. I never thought about that. That's cool. Yeah. I could do the lyrics even if they were corny. And you were, you know, this great musician. Matt was the guy that when we all learned guitar around the same age, we learned Smoke on the Water and then Crazy Train or whatever was.
I learned those first too. I know.
Yeah. But then it was a week later, Matt knew all the chords and could finger pick. And we were all, yeah, you're the guy. You're the actual musician. And I was in orchestra with Matt. I played violin and he played cello. But Matt is just this wunderkind of a musician.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
And did you guys, you're in a band, you played some shows around NWA back then?
Oh, no.
We were in orchestra together, which is funny because I just found, we were moving, I just found this cello here. I got it fixed recently. That's the cello that I played in our Kirksey Middle School Orchestra. And so, yeah, we were both in orchestra together and we wrote songs together and stuff. And we would play, but we never played out or were in like official band ever. But.
Yeah. No, I was definitely that kid that like daydreamed of becoming a famous rock star, but I don't think I would have ever had the confidence to get up on stage. I did try to get into my middle school's talent show one year by playing Judas Priest's Breaking the Law with one of our former friends. He was guitar and I was bass. And I would pay so much money to see if somebody recorded that because I am positive. We never rehearsed. And so we literally showed up and just, I'm screaming into a mic and playing bass and he's playing guitar. I would love to hear how terrible that sounded.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think we all have our cringeworthy moments looking back, you know? Well, Jared, so Matthew, you stuck with music the whole way through, but Jared, you diverged and went into film. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I think, I've always loved stories, right? I've loved daydreaming. For some reason, reality was never quite enough for me, you know? So I would obsess about musicians and read everything about them or obsess about books and read everything about the writing of the book. And I would devour movies and I would devour the behind the scenes special features on DVDs. And I would, you know, so just from an early age, it was like storytelling in any form was just everything I cared about. You know, it was the thing that made me feel peace. And so it was in high school where I kind of realized like, oh, the common thread here is movies. I want to do that. I want to try to figure out how to make movies. But growing up in Rogers, Arkansas in the early 2000s and 2010s, there was no clear pathway on how to get into filmmaking. I didn't know anybody with a camera. I got a camera, a camcorder. We'd make skateboarding videos, but there was just this deep thing of that's what I want to do. And I think it has a lot to do with my dad. I have three older sisters. He raised us all on really great movies. And maybe it was inappropriate at times to watch, I don't know, Apocalypse Now when I'm 12 or 13 years old. I literally don't remember how old I was when I saw it the first time, but growing up on kind of the classics, Coppola, Orson Welles, a lot of the great Martin Scorsese cinema, but then Weird Things too, The Who's Tommy I was raised on. And so it's definitely because of my dad that I had a pretty well-versed diet of movies.
So did you immediately, when you graduated, did you go off to college to study film?
Yeah, I went to University of Central Arkansas for their film program.
Oh, yeah. They have a great film program.
Yeah. I knew I needed help figuring out what to do. When I would shoot short films with my friends in high school, I didn't know that you could edit. I also had no idea how sound got synced with footage. I literally knew nothing. I would edit in camera. And so I would go action, and shoot a scene. And then I would cut where I wanted the next shot to come in. And then I'd go film that. And so I was literally, I knew I had no idea. I knew I wasn't doing it the right way. And so I knew I needed to go to film school. And I did 2 years there. And then I left.
Where'd you go to after that?
I moved to Florida, actually. I moved to Florida to go live with my mom and decided to stay there for a couple of years after she moved back to Arkansas. And then I moved to New Orleans about 2 years later. And so I left Arkansas in 2014 and then came to New Orleans in 2017.
Okay. And when you went to New Orleans, were you just immediately kind of getting into the film scene and working your way up there?
Yeah, I immediately knew I wanted, I mean, that's why I moved there, right? My partner, she got a teaching job there, but I knew for a long time that New Orleans was the closest film hub to Arkansas. And I knew I didn't want to move to California or New York. I wanted to stay in the South. And so, yeah, I moved there for that reason and pretty quickly got a job at an ad agency and really cut my teeth doing that. I took a weird route, though. I knew people that worked on sets as PAs and day players in the camera department. And I just knew that they were working 60-hour weeks and that they really didn't feel like they had a lot of upward momentum to get promoted. Because then in New Orleans, a lot of those films fly in directors and DPs and some of the bigger crews from California. And so if you live in New Orleans, you kind of just get hired to be middle management of a film set. And so I decided to go the commercial route and get into doing ads because I knew that I would have the free time to write my own scripts to get better at all the different craft of filmmaking. And so I found a really great community in New Orleans doing commercial work.
Well, Matt, let's jump back to you for a second. So were you music the whole way through going into college and everything?
Yeah, pretty much. So when I was in high school is when I really started. Jared and I played in orchestra through, I don't know if Jared, if you did orchestra in high school at all, but I did it a little bit in high school. But that's really when I started playing guitar, and I met a local blues musician here, and I started taking lessons from him, and I'd go sit in on his gigs, and he'd go take a break, and I'd get to play a couple songs by myself, and I kind of cut my teeth that way with the guitar stuff. And then in college, I was pretty sure I wanted to go in music, but I wasn't 100% sure which direction. And so I studied here at the community college, and that's where I met my sort of mentor, Ben Harris, who is now the director for Sona, the program director. And so he kind of pushed me in the direction of guitar performance and jazz music and stuff. And so I started studying with him and later transferred to the University of Louisville, where I got a degree on jazz guitar. And after that, once I graduated, I kind of walked right into a gig where I was playing with this group called Lincoln Bridge, who was on America's Got Talent. And they're known for being an a cappella group, but they always toured with a guitar player who would play about 70% of the set was with a guitar player. And they needed a new guitarist. And so that's what I did after school is I toured with them for a long time, and then COVID hit. And that's kind of when I started thinking about maybe getting into my true passion was really more in sort of the creative space of music, writing music and composing and stuff. And that's when I really started thinking about how to get into that field. And so I started teaching and doing some stuff during COVID, and then I applied and I did a master's degree in composition and orchestration. And so, yeah, I did that. And so I have kind of pivoted to more composing and creative stuff now, but still get out and play a little bit and do some teaching and all that kind of stuff. So
now, before West of Greatness, you did like a few short films and things like that and got kind of cut your teeth in that.
Yeah. Jared and I kind of reconnected a couple years back now, maybe four years now. He was, I don't know if you were on Dead Driver, were you the DP or cinematographer?
I was the camera operator and the editor.
Yeah. So that was the first short film I did. Jared was working on a film called The Dead Driver. So I did that short film, and I was working on, I did like a Roblox game that was pretty fun. And, some stuff here and there for podcasts or various little animated shorts and stuff. And so, yeah. And then West of Greatness is my first feature film, which we're excited about. So,
Well, let's talk about West of Greatness. I admit I haven't got to see the film yet, but I have watched a lot of the really fantastic background videos you guys have on this up on YouTube. So I know you don't want to call it a mockumentary, but I mean, maybe it's because it's not so much a Christopher Guest thing, but it leans maybe a little bit more in the Blair Witch direction, but not horror either. And I think it's a fantastic concept, and you know, it is about these bodybuilders. And so, Jared, I do want to talk about just your initial pitch on here in a minute, because to me, it kind of felt like you walk into a room and you're like, it's Pumping Iron meets 8 Mile. And like, that's kind of the pitch for it. But I want to get into that. But first, let's talk about the genesis of the idea and kind of tell, you know, the audience a little bit about the film.
First off, I love that comparison. I often say it's Pumping Iron meets the Florida Project. And so I love that. I love that you pulled that there. So yeah, the genesis, it's so strange where ideas come from. You know, I am a filmmaker, so obviously I think in a lot of visuals, right? I kind of see things in my head all the time. And I just had this vision of one of my friends, Eric Moore, who's actually one of the leads in the film, somehow gaining muscle over time. He's a really scrawny guy. And so I just had this weird vision, for real, of this young, skinny guy getting bigger. And so I didn't know what that meant. And it's just such a weird idea.
And it's not just necessarily the kind of thing you can share with your buddy. You know,
no, I know.
I'm thinking a lot about you getting buff. I mean, not in a weird way, but.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. To where, yeah, I wasn't telling people about this idea. It just was a thing, you know. I was, this is a visual I'm seeing in my brain. I wonder what it subconsciously means. And then I was driving around the town of West Wego, Louisiana one day. And I was driving there I was hired as a camera operator to work on a short film. And I was driving around this weird town that is across the river is across the Mississippi River in New Orleans, right? And now New Orleans is just known as this kind of beautiful French Spanish architecture. There's this media perception of it's slow and Southern and jazz music all over the place and stuff. Or people think of Hurricane Katrina, right? Like those are kind of the two things people think about. And there is a lot of that beautiful architecture and nature, or, you know, architecture. And there is, you know, it's not a hyperbole that there's jazz music playing any day in the city and stuff like that. But a lot of the town is very working class, and especially across the river, whereas a lot of people live on the other side of the river and they work in the city. The city is ran by hospitality workers, by folks that are, you know, blue collar, and they are often the people that are forgotten the most about when we talk about New Orleans and the culture. And so I'm driving around this town, and it looks a lot like what Rogers, Arkansas used to look like when I grew up there. If you go now with kind of how it's grown with Bentonville, it looks a lot different than what it looked like when Matt and
I remember how it looked when you were growing up during that era. Yeah, it's all of it is very different. I mean,
yeah.
Bentonville especially, but Rogers has changed, and even more so in the last year after that tornado hit, and they're starting to rebuild, and they're sort of building it maybe in the vein of Bentonville a little bit.
Yeah, it's almost looking like it's Austin, you know, in some ways, right? That very cool, hipstery, like, very clean, and a lot of it's good, right? Like, that's a lot of growth, but
it's Austin built by consultants.
Yes. 1000%. Yeah, I have a lot of weird feelings about it. Like, I guess it's all good because it's economic growth, but there is something strange about going home now and being like, it looks a little manufactured here. But anyway, Rogers and like Springdale, Arkansas were very industrial. Like, Tyson is there, a lot of factories there. Run down downtown. Nothing real fancy to do if you're a kid. You kind of go skateboard in the Family Dollar parking lot. Literally not a whole lot to do. There was this place called the Spick and Span. It was a old laundromat right by where Matt grew up. And it was abandoned. And it was just a great, weird visual place of everyone knew what the Spick and Span was. You'd go skate around that neighborhood. And so West Wego just looked so much like Rogers. It was a factory town, kind of dying industrial, but had cute parts and just was regular folks. And so literally I was, I want to film here. I want to film a movie about the people I grew up with, who my family is. My dad worked a job at Granger Industrial Supply for decades, nothing fancy. We went to public school. We weren't hungry, but we did not grow up with wealth And so I was just, man, I want to film here. This would be a great setting. And then literally a couple days later, I'm going to bed and the two ideas of seeing my friend get bigger and filming a movie in West Wego popped in my brain. And I went bodybuilding movie on the West Bank of Louisiana. And that's literally how it started.
Yeah, I do feel I should have my cup filled with pre-workout and creatine while we're having this conversation. I mean, I was never a bodybuilder at all, but I did used to be a gym rat. And a lot of those workouts, one thing I would do is I would get workouts from Don Saladino or some of these other people who are training a lot of the Marvel guys just to see if I could do it. I did the one that Josh Brolin used to get huge for playing Cable in Deadpool 2. And my God, it's really about an 8-hour day. And in between working out, you're just eating chicken constantly and drinking protein shakes. But I tried like 3 days. I got through all of it. And it's like, I can barely go to work right now. So I ended up just doing the second half, which was still like 3 hours. And it's insane what these guys do. And so I am curious because I noticed within the videos that you guys have put out, one of your producers or executive producer is also the trainer and he kind of worked with the guys. So yeah, I mean, well, I guess I'm jumping ahead a little bit. How did your friend and then ultimately the other actor take to this idea and, you know, really go all in to just get as buff as they could?
Yeah. I mean, so that idea comes in and then I go, I think it'd be interesting for it to be a documentary, a fake documentary. And then I think it'd be really compelling if we had two actors join a bodybuilding show and do the actual work of working out every day, eating a ton of food. I just was like, God, that seems like such an interesting filmmaking process. Like I was a big fan of Boyhood or what Linklater does with like the Before trilogy of just like, I'm really interested in time and how can we capture realness and stuff. And so I wrote a screenplay. There's a 120-page screenplay for the film. And I wrote it for that one guy. And it was really easy to write for him. And he was just excited. Like the film industry was kind of dying in New Orleans for a little bit. So he was just thrilled to hear like, hey, I'm getting a movie written for me to star in. And then I did casting calls for the other guy for a very long time. And that was a very hard role to find of a guy who could play a young brooding man, but not do it in the cliche James Dean way. And so I did a casting call for about 6 months until I found this guy. And then when I told him what the pitch was of, we will buy your food. And we will train you 6 days a week for over a year for you to get in character. We're going to film the movie along that whole time. I mean, it was just like, I think any young actor's dream, right? They grow up loving the stories of Marlon Brando or these other actors that do really intense work to get into character. And we're literally telling him like, hey, the first movie you ever book is going to be that kind of a thing where you're going to be doing the work for a year. And so they were thrilled.
Were you worried either of them might just quit midway?
Yes, it was hard. These guys had to go to the gym for 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, and eat 6,000 calories a day. And there were days that they could not fulfill that obligation, like you shared earlier.
Eating that much is harder than going to the gym for that long, yeah. Honestly. You feel sick and you're just having to shove vegetables and rice and chicken in your mouth and you're just falling out and you can barely chew because I don't want to eat anymore.
Yeah. In fact, there's a scene in the movie where we're doing that. Part of the film is following these guys try that. And so there was one day where we were filming. I was like, hey, I want to film you eating. And your trainer says you actually have to eat this. And so we're not acting here. Shove that food in your mouth. And it's a really gross scene because he's just drooling. But they loved it. Chris Tucci, who's our executive producer and our trainer, he knew how to make it fun for them. And it was really hard. But I think that they got excited because they were seeing gains, you know, like mm-hmm. These young artists are watching themselves transform in the gym. They're feeling better. And listen, I'm not a bodybuilder either. Y'all can't see me on this podcast, but wouldn't it be hard for you to determine that I'm not a gym guy? And so I even was obsessed about this scene, but you could see that they were having a really good time kind of getting jacked.
Yeah.
And it was purpose for them, you know, it was so much fun for these guys to go like every day I have to do the same thing. I had to eat and I had to go to the gym and I'm going to be making a movie, you know, and we paid them pretty well for an indie film. You know, we joked that they got paid to work out. They didn't get paid to act because they acted probably 40 days out of a 18-month period, but they worked out every day. There's not another film like this. There are lots of films similar to what we're doing, right? You mentioned earlier Christopher Guest or Blair Witch, but we're deciding to make a drama. It's not scary. It's not a comedy where we have two actors kind of do the impossible of train for a year and a half, and we're going to film it the entire time, and we're going to also throw in real bodybuilders to be the other characters. And so people got really excited by that. They wanted to see that film. And so we paid for a lot of the movie ourselves, me and Chris Tucci. I got a producer named David Pons who joined in. He gave us money and he has equity in the film. I met him because he's another filmmaker in New Orleans, and he just really loved the idea. And he really believed in me. He saw some of the trailers that we were making while we were filming. We had the benefit of, since we were filming for so long, that we were able to kind of edit along the way and show people the progress to get extra money. And so I think the thing that sells it is the way that we made it. That kind of is inherent in the watching of the film. I don't think you need to know that in order to enjoy the movie. In fact, some of my favorite responses have been people that had no idea what this was and then them being blown away by what this product is. But I think that if you are earnest and you can show people that you really care, people want to join your team. And so a cool thing that we did is that normally a movie costs so much money because you're having people with very specialized skills come together and work a 12-hour day with very expensive equipment. Well, the fact that I own most of the equipment with my director of photography helped a lot, but all my other crew did it for equity. In fact, it was their idea of what we're going to forfeit a day rate here because we want to own this film with you. And so all the key departments own the movie with me. You know, it's not just my film.
So Greg and Clint, the guys who did Sing Sing, they also did this movie Jockey, that's their model. Is everyone, like, it's all kind of an equity thing. Everybody takes a flat rate, even if you're Coleman Domingo or whoever. That's kind of how they do it. And so, yeah, that's really cool to see that you guys explored that route too. And I think it also reflects on the sort of the tightness of the community you guys have developed and the relationships you've developed, that you convinced your friends and your just people you kind of knew around town, this is the vision, let's all make it happen. Because that can be harder than just convincing somebody with millions of dollars to cut you a check. Like, getting them to believe in the back end of things can be a challenge.
Yeah. And listen, we are first-time filmmakers. We're not under any delusion that this movie might sell for millions of dollars and everyone gets a great payday. That's the hope, right? We're shooting for that. I'm going to work my ass off to try to get the best deal. But yeah, no one was under any delusion that that was guaranteed. They believed in the script. They believed in the story. And then the other benefit is I think anybody that's made a film before or done any kind of art before, they've done the job where they got paid hardly any money and they did 5 days in a row on a set where they're working 13-hour days, and they get home and they go, why did I do this? Why did I say yes? I'm not making any money and I'm physically exhausted and I'm just not learning anything. That never happened on our film because since we were filming for so long, there were big breaks in between each shooting day, which is very rare for a film. Normally it's like nonstop, foot on the pedal. You are working 30 days straight, no sleeping, no nothing. And this was like, hey, can you give me a day here? Can you give me a day there? And so no one ever got resentful. No one ever had a bad time. We never worked over 10 hours, which is also a miracle. I think it's because of the way I wrote the story, is that it's a movie that's supposed to take place over 9 months, and it did. And so no one ever got too tired. No one ever said, I'm done. I can't keep doing this. Every time they were like, hell yeah. That sounds like a blast. And so that's how we were able to pull it off.
How many days, I mean, were you shooting most days with the guys while they were working out, and then the scenes in between you would shoot, like the more of the scripted scenes?
So no, I would check in often, but we wrote a screenplay and we stayed pretty true to the screenplay. Of course, things change, especially when you get real guys to sign up. But we had the arc of these characters already planned. And so we actually needed long periods of time between filming so that they would visually be bigger for the next scene. I would go there probably once a week to film a little bit of them working out and just to hang out and to talk about the process, keep them engaged. But no, I wasn't filming every day, amazingly. There's actually cell phone footage in the movie, though. I love that kind of mixed media thing that's happening right now in cinema that was filmed by the guys or filmed by their trainer. I loved that. But no, I was, you know, having to work my day job, which is I make commercials, and also I was producing a TV show at the exact same time. And so it was super hard to go, I'm raising money to pay my bills and pay for this film at the exact same time I'm trying to make it. And so that was kind of stressful, but they were at the gym every day.
Nice. I got to say, their devotion is very impressive. I think a lot of people would have quit before that. So. Yeah.
I mean, we set ourselves up for failure, you know, like most indie actors on a micro budget film, if they're following the SAG rules. Now, we're not a SAG film, but we generally like to follow union rules and how we treat people just because we think that that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
These actors made a ton of money. Like any other indie actor I've met that's done a feature has not made how much each of these guys made. And they didn't make tons of money, but they got paid really well. But I also think they stayed because they grew to love each other, which was the coolest thing to see. This film is about two guys who don't know each other, who become friends, and like this tender friendship that can grow in the like throes of masculinity. And that happened in real life. I mean, they spent every day together. And so before we hired the other actor, Zach, because like I said, I knew Eric, we did a chemistry test because I was like, oh, it's going to be important that they jive, that they're cool, that they can hang out, and that this Zach guy can keep up, has a good sense of humor, and has a work ethic. And he did, but it became immediately apparent that he was awesome. And so they became so close together, and then with their trainer, to where, you know, I don't even think money was even the motivating factor. It's just that they loved this process.
Well, let's talk a little bit more. Oh, sorry. So you mentioned you wrote a pretty tight script. How much improv came into play within this?
So a lot. So I wrote a script where the two lead actors and their family were all scripted, right? And then we were going to throw a real competition, and we knew that the guys that were going to sign up were going to be themselves. I was pretty happy that, like, I predicted the types of guys that would sign up for this. And so I wrote a lot of scenes based on the personalities of guys that go to the gym all the time to have conflict, and those guys signed up. And so I changed the dialogue to not be exactly the same as I wrote it. And I changed the names in the script once we met our real competitors. And I basically told them, like, all right, we're going to shoot this scene. I need you to get me from here to here. I'm not going to tell you what to say or how to say it, because I want you to be yourself, and you're an actor. If I gave you lines to memorize, it would be very obvious that you are trying to deliver lines because you're not a trained actor. And so there was a lot of improv in those scenes, but they knew where they needed to go, right? Those scenes have an arc. And so these young guys were just incredible, and they were game to try to be an actor. They were just so excited. And then with the real actors, I'm a big believer in whoever has the best idea on set wins. And so we would shoot a scene a bunch of times, scripted. And then I'd go, all right, let's play longer. Let's see what we can get. And almost always, those are the takes that you're going to see in this movie. Because they were in their characters for so long. And they cared so much about the research they were doing, especially Gordy Cassell, who plays Jessica Priscilla Bridgeway. They are an incredible actor who does a tremendous amount of research. In fact, they wrote pages upon pages of backstory for the character that they wrote as much as the entire screenplay of my movie is. I'm not even kidding. They wrote over 100 pages of backstory for this character, to where when I called action, they knew, go wild. Let's see what we can get. And so this is a totally fiction film, right? The bodybuilding competition, we act like it's been around since the 60s. It hasn't. We threw it ourselves. We hired judges to be the judges. It's an actual show. But these guys, they played themselves in scenes we manufactured. Our actors had a script. But in each one of those scenes, we had the breathing room to find something better than what was written on the page. And so that kind of improv, I think, lends itself to what I was ultimately going for, which was to make a fake documentary with such verisimilitude that the audience would be questioning the whole time, like, what is real? Is this real or not? And that really comes across because I think they were all so natural. And so there was a lot of improv, but it was guided improv, right?
Yeah. Like reality TV.
Yeah.
I really like the fact that you had these two different sets of dudes doing like different challenges of like these, the actor's physical challenge, the guys that are in the physical stuff are like, it's an acting challenge for them. So that's kind of a thing to think about. Well, Matt, I want to move to you real quick, because when did you become, I mean, I'm sure Jared approached you early on, but were you there thinking about what you were going to score? Like, you got handed the script like after he wrote it and you sort of brainstormed along the way, or did you come in on the back end? How did that work with your collaboration?
Yeah, so Jared sent me this screenplay well before they started filming and getting funding and all that stuff. And I read it and I thought it was amazing. And I immediately was like, man, I was starting to kind of think of some ideas just in terms of just overall sort of concepts for the music, just a little bit. And then they went off and shot the film, and Jared was sending me updates the whole time. And then I was actually lucky enough, we went down to New Orleans and I got to be on set for the day of the final competition when they shot all the final competition stuff, which was amazing because it was cool to see all that in person and just everything that goes into. I've never been on a film set before, so all the different people and roles and seeing the guys there, all the people who are in the competition, and just sort of having that moment of awareness of like, man, just the sheer amount of work that went into making the film. I really had a moment. I sat there and I was like, okay, do not screw this up. These people worked so hard on this movie and they're going to deliver it to me. I'm kind of like one of the last stops. And music sometimes can ruin a film if the music is not good. So, you know, that was cool having that moment. So anyway, yeah, they shot and filmed it, and Jared and I were kind of in touch throughout that. And then as they started editing it there, after all that is when I really got more involved and we started that kind of process.
And were there any influences you were drawing from, whether it be sports films or just like workout exercise playlists? Like what were you thinking within this?
Oh, yeah. So once they had the film kind of edited and stuff, Jared and I started talking about references. And I think as part of our shared past that Jared and I have as being buddies as kids is we had a lot of similar references. And so we were able to kind of hit the ground running, and we had a bit of a, you know, creative shorthand that we had developed in terms of we grew up watching. I went to his house as a kid and his dad showed me Tommy, and we'd listen to the same music. And so, yeah, I guess the references that we checked out, it was everything from the films that inspire this one in terms of They Shoot Horses, Don't They, and Pumping Iron. And I listened to a lot of music from Rocky. But then there was a lot of stuff like we listened to a lot of Elvis and a lot of funk music. And a big part of this film is the setting, too. So it's very, I don't know if Americana is the right word, but kind of Southern. And I would listen to a lot of Bill Frisell and Aaron Copland and a lot of American composers and small orchestral stuff. So Jared and I had a playlist we sent back and forth that when you look through that playlist, it's like the variety on this playlist is wild, but you can really hear that reflected back in the score because the story itself really balances a lot of different aspects and a lot of different emotions and a lot of different vibes that we had to kind of encompass with the score. So
since it's New Orleans, did Cash Money Records or Master P influence anything on this? Was he on the playlist?
I will say there was a lot of hip hop. I think there was a Master P tune on there or two. So yeah, that was definitely a big part of it as well.
Okay. Well, guys, I'm really excited to see this film. What day is it going to be playing at BFF?
So it's going to be playing at 6 p.m. on June 20th.
Okay. And if people want to get tickets, they can go to BFF's website and everything like that.
Yeah. They sell individual tickets to the films on the BFF website. And you just look for West of Greatness, the story of the West Wego Muscle Boys.
Are both of you guys going to be in town for it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Cool.
I'll be cool.
So, to wrap things up, are you guys working on anything new? Are you already collaborating on the next project?
You know, Matt's going to be my composer forever. I loved working with him so much. I can't wait to make another movie. I don't want to hire new people. I just want to work with the same exact people because I had such a good time making West of Greatness. I've got a couple screenplays finished already in the books. I haven't sent them to Matt yet, but he knows that I'm going to be working his ass to death. And let me just give some props on Matt real quick. Matt's so talented. And normally when a composer makes a film, they have what's called a picture lock cut, where it's been edited, it's not going to change, and they get to time everything to music. Well, I told Matt, hey, that's not how this is going to work, because we're trying to meet deadlines for film festival submissions. And so we're going to be sending you scenes that are not even close to being done yet, but I need you to start working on them. And sometimes your music will influence how we edit. Sometimes we're going to need you to spend even more time refining your music. And he pulled off, I think, a miracle of a score. It is beautiful. It is profound. It is gorgeous. It is so perfect, each song. And there's like 30 songs. It's crazy. It's way more than most scores. And so, sorry, I just needed to sing my praises of Matt.
Matt, do you want to sing praises of Jared?
No, you don't need
to. No, I'm just kidding. Honestly, the story that Jared came up with, the film, all the talent that went into it, it made the scoring easy. You know, when I was sitting down to write music for the film, I mean, there were times I'd be sitting there, I was like, you know, I would get distracted just watching this awesome movie that I couldn't wait to see the full thing. But he gave me such excellent material to start out with and such great direction in terms of, Jared really struck the perfect balance of, he gave me such great direction in the beginning of how he wanted the music to function and the influences and what each scene needed to do and accomplish, but also giving me, you know, such creative freedom to, you know, write the music how I heard it. And I think that's rare. You know, I've worked with a lot of people and I've written music for people. And, you know, Jared just did such an amazing job at staying cool and calm under pressure and delivering me exactly what I needed to know, but letting me kind of do my thing as well. So it was a fantastic experience. And, you know, I'm looking forward to doing more for sure.
Nice. Well, if people want to follow along with the film or with either of you and your work, how can they do that?
Matt.
MatthewMozzoni.com, 1T, MozzoNi. You can check out my website. I've got a record out there, Hot Light. It's a little funk, jazz fusion thing. But yeah, my website or Instagram, I'll be posting all the stuff I'm working on there.
So yeah, so follow West of Greatness. Check out the website, westofgreatness.com. On Instagram, it's West of Greatness. My own personal Instagram handle is @is_somethinghuman. Something Human is my production company. And so if you want to visit that website too, it's somethinghuman.co. Yeah.
Guys, I hope I get to see its premiere. We can go chug some protein shakes together afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Do a little flexing. West of Greatness, check it out, BFF, and hopefully it'll be streaming or in theaters, all that good stuff very soon. Congratulations on the film, and thanks for coming by Real Talk Arkansas.
Thanks, Cody.
Thanks so much for having us.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Real Talk Arkansas. I'd like to thank Jared and Matthew for stopping by. You stay tuned. Let's see what West of Greatness does. When you get the chance, hopefully one day soon, if you can't see it in the theater, you can watch it on streaming. Don't want to miss it. And, you know, hey, if you're thinking about going out and getting jacked, I mean, just, I don't know, talk to your doctor or consult Reddit and hot creatine, whatever works for you. As always, I'm your host, Cody Ford, and this has been Real Talk Arkansas. Thanks for listening. Real Talk Arkansas is a production of the Arkansas Cinema Society. Theme music by Prince Hills. Follow ACS on Facebook, Instagram, or our website, ArkansasCinemaSociety.org.